Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello, and welcome to Dwell, a Searcy Institute podcast for homeschool moms by homeschool moms and grandmas. I am Karen Kern, and today I'm joined by my co-host, Renee Mathis, and our guest today is Christina Davis. Hello, ladies.
Hi.
Hi, Karen.
Hi. Today, our topic is training your kids to work. And I asked our guest, Christina, to join us because her family is known in our community, our church community, and the community at large as workers. If somebody needs something done, if somebody has a need, they're a family that are there together serving with their tools, their trucks, whatever they have, whatever resources they have, they're there to help. They also have 7 children and they all have jobs. The oldest ones all work hard. And so I wanted to have Christina on to talk about what that looks like in her family and how they inspire their children to follow in their footsteps by serving in these capacities. So welcome, Christina.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Do you want to start by introducing yourself and your family to us?
Yeah. I'm Christina. My husband is Trevor, and our 7 kids. We have 5 boys and 2 girls. Our oldest is 20, and then we have an 18, and a 17, and a 15-year-old, and a 14-year-old, and an 11, and an 8-year-old.
It sounds busy. I know them all, but when I hear you say that, it's a lot.
It is a lot. It is very cool, but it's great.
So when I was thinking about training our kids to work, it could go in so many different directions. Training to work in terms of serving other people, in terms of when they're young, working inside your home, when they're older, having jobs. So let's just jump in and take it wherever your thoughts went with the question.
Okay. Well, we got some great advice when we were first starting out with kids, and our oldest few are bunched up. They're so close together that it was a while before they were actually helpful. You know, we just asked for a lot of people's advice who had a lot of kids and whose kids were older. And they really helped us figure out, you know, in the beginning, we were not asking enough of our kids. You know, you tend to get into these rhythms where you can just do it and you just hurry up and get it done. You just want to see the work get done more so than taking 10 times longer to train someone else to do it. So it was probably too late that we realized some of our children were capable of so much more. So we ended up learning that as we went and as we had more kids do it. So one of the best things that anyone ever told me, advice long ago, was that you teach the youngest possible person to do the job. So you know, if you need the dishwasher unloaded, you don't ask the 11-year-old to do that if the 7-year-old can do it. because then the more you give the younger ones, you know, you pass down some of the jobs to them, it frees up the older ones to do harder and harder things, which then frees you up to do what only you can do. So I felt like that was great advice because, to be honest, I went to college and I got a degree that I feel like has been pretty useless. I got a degree in child and family development. And the reason why I say it's been useless is because it was so, I guess it was just so progressive, or it wasn't the kind of things that became helpful when I was actually a mother. A lot of it I needed to unlearn, but this asking your children to do hard work or come alongside you and you train them to do the jobs so that you are freed up to do what only you as a mother can do. You know, you take a supervisory role. That was not the kind of stuff they were telling us in college. You know, that was just a little too old fashioned to have your kids learn to do work. So we had a hobby farm before we lived in North Carolina. We lived in South Carolina. We just had a dairy cow and goats and chickens. So that was the kind of work that my three oldest boys were doing for a while. They were actually milking the cow. And then they brought the milk in to me. And then, you know, I would take it from there. But in the, you know, as they got older and then we moved here, it totally changed how it looked because we no longer lived out in the country. But this teaching the youngest possible person to do it, it has really reaped a lot of rewards. So as they move out of a job, you know, they teach their next youngest sibling to do it and so on, so that our chore chart, if you were to come into our house and see our chore chart, it would look totally different next year because it does, you know, it evolves over time. It's constantly changing. So it's a work in progress. And you have to look at that way because when you make that chore chart and you realize there are some bugs in this system, you know, we've got to move this around because these two people need to be in the same room at the same time, you know, something doesn't work. But I put a lot of time into that, especially at the beginning of a new school year, because like this year right now, my 18-year-old, he just moved. And since he's gone, now there are holes, you know, things that are not getting done. So I'm having to move other people in there. That leaves their job empty. And I can either either means more work for me because I'm having to fill in the gaps, or I have to rearrange it so that everybody takes a little bit of what Corbin left behind. So that's what I mean by it's constantly having to change and evolve because my two oldest, you know, have graduated. And so I actually have fewer workers now. You know, it's going to get harder as they graduate and leave. And I realize there are a lot of people who have all small children and they're thinking this is not my reality at the moment. But one day the scales will tip and then your kids will be more help than they are, you know, more of an asset than a liability when it comes to how much work there is in the home. So even now, it's really a great investment of your time to teach them to stand there and train them however long it takes to do it right. And sometimes you have to make some changes in your home in order to make it an environment that little people can work in. So we have cheap dishes, and that's from a lot of experience on our dishes getting broken. But you know, we have the way right now, Lucy is 8. She unloads the dishwasher and the dishes go straight into the lowest cabinet where she can reach everything. She can't reach anything up here. So she can't, you know, do those jobs. But that is what we set up the kitchen so that the youngest one can do those jobs. And then we also have things like, you know, jobs where we have a two-story house. And so it makes some things hard to carry up and down. But so we're just trying to design the workflow to be workable for the littlest person who can do it. And it's really, it makes it possible for the house to run without me. So I think that was just the advice that I got, you know, 15 years ago, and I started implementing it and tried to make it, you know, keep going as each kid came along, you know, work them into the system whenever it's possible.
You are very organized. I just love listening to you. That's really good. I'm curious, like, what are some things that, and so I've kind of got two questions floating around here. Number one, do you ever work alongside with your children, even today? Like, you know, yeah, I know they could do the dishes by themselves, but is it a treat to have mom standing there with them and washing and drying dishes together? Or do you kind of rotate around with all your kids and just kind of keep an eye on what they're doing?
Well, our kitchen is so small. We are literally alongside each other, whether we want to be or not. But I mean, just before I came up here, my daughter, Judah, she's 15. She wants to know how to make sourdough. And so I'm trying to show her all the, you know, moments where, okay, well, now it's been a couple hours, we got to do this. So she was just down there and I was with her doing it just because, you know, supervising, but she's almost got it. So that's going to be a relief to me when I can step out of that, because we do it several times a week. Last night because my older kids do have jobs outside of the home, my dish loaders were all gone. And so I was, a younger one was doing it, who doesn't normally do it, and was putting some things in there that were not dishwasher safe. So yes, I was definitely in a supervisory role there. And I realized my standards are way higher than theirs. This has actually been a big lesson for me over the years, because I tend to be a perfectionist. So I've had to really lower my expectations and say, you know, it, for the peace of the home, I would rather have a lighthearted, you know, time that we're doing our after dinner cleanup. I'd like it to be fun, or I don't want to have to come down hard on people because they didn't do it up to my standard, but I want it to be done well enough. So I'm having to take into account their age. You know, of course, the younger they are, the more it's going to look a little crazy when you look in the dishwasher, and I have to say, well, that doesn't really go there. So I am coming along and checking their work behind them, but I'm trying really hard not to make them feel like I'm just finding fault. So I'm having to lower my standard to not exactly how it would look if I did it.
That's good. There's a lot of good lessons there for us, though. And I love your emphasis on, let's be joyful about this, you know, according to the capabilities that the kids God has given us. That's really neat.
Yeah, we actually recently, last year, twice we went to Texas to visit the LeBlanc family. And both times we noticed that their after dinner cleanup is the standard is so high. It's just amazing to watch how clean that place gets, that we renamed after dinner cleanup. We renamed it Operation Kobe, because Kobe's kitchen looks spotless after supper. So we told the kids, we're like, guys, we gotta step up our game.
But I've been to Kobe's house and it's brand new. And there is something about when, because my house is less than 2 years old. And when it's 2 years old or less, you know, you are really careful about all those cleanup.
Rena, you said that your question had two parts. Did you have another question related?
I did. And now I can't remember what it is.
While you're thinking, I have a question. So do you have your older ones teaching the youngers? Because, for example, Corbin used to come and mow for us and do the trimming and all of that. Now, and then Finn came. Now I think it's mostly Christian.
Yeah.
Who comes. So yeah, they take care of our yard, and it's great because when it's in the 90s here and Andrew's traveling and I'm home alone and our grass grows really fast, and those Davis boys are coming over. And I'm so grateful for them. But I've noticed that, you know, there must be times when the olders teach the youngers how to do stuff.
Yeah. And that's what's got to happen around here is the, you know, as the older ones are leaving or they're doing more, they're working in their jobs more, they are having to hand off to the next one. And so Christian is the one who's mowing the grass. But the hard part is when you have so many boys like I do, you end up with wanting to, you don't want anybody to get away with doing nothing. But as long as they're here, they're pitching in, you know, that. So our yard, we end up dividing it up into who's going to do the backyard because there's a big hill in our backyard and it is not fun. Who's going to do our tiny little front yard, but it has to look good because, you know, there's edging involved. And then we have a garden and our 17-year-old Finn, he's our resident gardener. So usually Finn gets the good end of that division of labor because he ends up he doesn't have to do yard work because he's always working in the garden anyway, you know? So that's an advantage to being the gardener, I guess.
Well, that's fair.
Okay. So I remember my second part.
Okay.
So it had to do with chores and work and also thinking about eventually getting jobs outside the home. Do you pay your kids an allowance? Do you pay them to do chores or do they learn to manage their money once they start working for other people?
That's both. So we do not pay them to do their chores because they're part of the family. We want them to, we have more of an old fashioned, if any man is unwilling to work, then he's not to eat. So we just, my kids actually do know that verse from 2 Thessalonians, but we're not going to starve them. We have that attitude that since they're a part of the family, then they need to pitch in and we divide the labor up, you know, in every, whether it's outside or inside, even if it's a project. So we just have everybody pitch in. We also don't want, one of the main things that I guess we are concerned about, especially living in America, is a sense of entitlement. And we do not want them to feel like, well, I'm trading my work for, I expect something for it always, because a lot of times that's just not the way that life is. You know, work needs to be done. You do it. You take initiative and you get in there and do it. So we don't pay them, but we do allow them to, if they want to earn money, then we will give them paying jobs. So washing the car or, you know, something that needs to be done irregularly. Those are the kind of things that we will take the first volunteer who's willing to take that job. And that's easier now because of the 11-year-old Noble and my 8-year-old Lucy. They're the only ones who don't have a job outside of the home. And I'm saying that with my fingers crossed because Christian, who's 14, he has his first job interview this Saturday.
Oh, what is it for?
At Tootie's Italian Deli.
Nice. Yeah. That new deli. What's he going to do there?
Well, they said that they need people to prep food sometimes after it's closed. So we'll see. He loves Italian food, but I don't know how well that's going to fit into it. But since he's 14, he just turned 14 in January, and it's still January. He is just now old enough in North Carolina to have a job, you know, a paying job. So my other kids have had jobs at 14, but they have been, so Judah worked at a nearby farm where I first met Larissa. That was, you know, she was taking care of the horses and the chickens and things. And Publix is just a quarter of a mile down the street. They hire at 14 also. So there's not a lot of places that will hire a 14-year-old, even though it's legal in our state. But up until then, you know, they earn money by mowing people's grass or doing odd jobs. Yeah.
So then you have to fit their job schedules into your schedule if you're driving them and picking them up and remembering to pick them up. Like, that's a lot.
You know, I do, but and at first it was a lot when Harrison was taking dual enrollment classes. Andy had a job. And Corbin then got a job, but you know, Harrison got his license pretty soon. And then he's having to drive. That's one of our agreements too, is with the older ones. you, even after they graduate, okay, if you're going to live here and take college classes, you know, at UNC Charlotte or at the community college, that's fine, but you do have to help drive your siblings places. So right now we have a schedule where the drivers have to drive younger siblings places when necessary. So it's getting easier though, because we have now three fully licensed drivers. And Judah is going to get her learner's permit in about 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So they're piling up needing us to drive with them. And there's not enough time for us to drive them before the next one's ready. And through driver's ed, like this is keeping up with the driving is a whole nother ball game.
Wow. Yeah. I remember when our last was finished with driver's ed and got his license, it feels like you've run the gauntlet of just the schedule. Mm-hmm. And it feels so good to have that done.
Yeah.
That was more of a graduation than graduation.
Yes. I know. The thing is, Christian's 14. And so when you're 14 and a half, you start taking driver's ed. So we're just about to start this process all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah. But we have a policy that our kids, and this is part of the, I guess, work ethic or fighting the entitlement that comes with being American. I don't know. We have a policy that until they have their first job, they cannot have a phone. And when they get, if they get their first job at 14 or 15, then they're just getting a flip phone or a, I don't know if you've heard of Gab phone. It's just talk and text. They're just getting a basic dumb phone. And that's for safety. But then when they're through their 16th birthday, we will get them a smartphone. And then, they can pass on their little flip phone or whatever to the next sibling when they get a job. So we kind of have a system that works there for the safety aspect of having to wait for, got to wait for somebody to come and pick you up on the corner. So they have that, but we just wait on that. And I mentioned earlier, one of the people that we've listened to advise about when to give kids a phone was Keith McCurdy. When Cersei interviewed him, it was the Commons, and Brian Phillips interviewed him, and it was raising sturdy children. And it was about this needing to expect more of your kids and don't make everything so easy for them that they have no obstacles or nothing hard to do, no challenges in their way. But he, his advice was all really, really helpful, especially as we went into the teen years, because I think a lot of us have some conflicting ideas, as I know I did from my education, where you feel almost like this tension between the maybe psycho babble kind of advice you've gotten, where you don't want to hurt your kid's self-esteem, or you don't want to, I don't know. And their creativity needs to be allowed. So they need to not be oppressed by too much work. I mean, you just have all this weird kind of advice that's been piling up. And then you hear like older people, or you read some of the older books and the parenting advice and, the hard work mentality, that work ethic, that is so different than what you're hearing nowadays. So I just felt like Keith McCurdy's went on the podcast, and I've actually heard him in person here too. It has been some really helpful advice that's, he did go into the cell phone thing and about, you need to wait until maybe they have a job. That's a good thing to wait for. He spoke in person here at Covenant Classical, and it was specifically about technology with your kids. And he's, so some of his ideas have really helped us reinforce what our policy would be, because, when you have all these kids, you definitely have to have a policy, because if you just keep taking it case by case, your kids see that as weakness and they will prey on that. But, if you have like, this is what we're going to do when you get your first job, then you can have a phone, and then we'll upgrade that later when you, you know, get to a certain age. So it has been, that's been where, how we've established a policy, because, you know, we just started having teenagers 7 years ago. We've had to test out some of this and, you know, watch our kids grow up with fear and trembling, you know?
So Christina, you've talked about kids working at home, right? Because we're part of a family, and that's what we do. We work together as a team, and also outside the home, being, you know, paid and learning to manage money and so forth. But I'm thinking of maybe a third category, and that would be working for others just in a service capacity, just because they're brothers and sisters in Christ from our church, or maybe there are people who are in need that we know. So what does that look like in your family as far as using our efforts and our labor to serve outside of our home?
Well, we have been very fortunate that we have been in churches that have already, they have a place that the teenagers can go. You know, here's this shelter that the kids are going to go, or they're going to go serve meals at the mission down in Charlotte. And there are different opportunities that my teenagers have, when they were old enough, have been able to step in, and they've been able to go with us or go as a group. Like right now, Judah, she's 15, and she comes with me to volunteer at it's called Our Community Closet, but it is a clothing ministry that is free clothes, and people, you don't have to pay anything. There's all kinds of other donations in there also. So we just go together. It's only open 3 times a month. And so the days that we can go, Judah and I are both going. And that has been an easy way for us to just jump into what a ministry that's already going on. And now, thankfully, this is just begun, and I'm really excited. There is a teen chapter of a club through Cabarrus County Homeschooling Association that we're members of. They have their teenagers are in a club called Astra, and Astra is actually a chapter that is sponsored by the adult version is called Altrusa, and Altrusa apparently is all over the country and in maybe larger cities. And I'm from a really small town, so I have not heard of it before. And they're sponsoring our teen club, and then the teens they're going to give them funds to go and do different ministries, service projects for the community. So in December, my teenagers were able to go with me to a food packing facility where they pack dried food and they mail it to, we mailed it to Haiti. So there are different countries where they need it. And it's got, they had it down to just this assembly line. It was perfection. Each teenager got one job, and then they packed the food, and we got to pray for the people in Haiti who are going to be receiving the food. And got to learn a little about the different places in Haiti that are receiving it. So we've been really fortunate that we were right there when the Cabarrus County Homeschooling Association decided this is what the teenagers are going to start working towards. So this year is going to be, I guess, our inaugural year where we're starting some new ministries. So that's just the things that are organizations. We have elderly people in our family who have needed some help. You know, my older kids have been great at just saying, I need to take off a week, and I'm going to drive down and take care, you know, help take care of what my grandmother or my great grandmother needs. So we're trying to see our schedule as being, flexible, so that if we're needed for something, you know, that my mom needed help, my grandmother, a couple weeks ago, I was able to just up and go and help her because my kids are all ready to step in. They said, you go do what you got to do. And that I think is, like I was saying earlier, that's like, I'm beginning to see the fruit of all those years of trying to get it so that my kids are able to do what needs to be done without me telling them to do it. So that was really, I almost couldn't believe that everything went fine without me. And yet that, I know that sounds like I have a high opinion of myself, but I was just like, wow, that was beautiful.
So rewarding, right? And so when your kids are all young adults and, you know, they're having their own families, I think that you'll really see them step in and help each other. You know,
yeah.
and like I see that some with my kids, when somebody has a need, others are there when they all live close by, and it is very rewarding. And, you know, and I think that's part of the culture of your family is that, you know, if there's work to be done, it'll get done and it'll get done well. And it's a joy. And I have a question related to that. So sometimes when you have a big family and it gets to the last two in the family, some of your naturally, I don't mean you, but maybe me, some of those policies can slip a little when it gets to the last, you know, it's like, oh, why does he get to watch that show? Nobody else got to watch it when they were 12. So I'm wondering how this might work out with, you know, cute little Lucy at the end there. Is she going to be having to like mow the grass when she's 13, you know, and she's like one of the last ones. Oh, I'm just wondering, you know, what you're guessing is going to, how that's going to go.
Well, I think that she's going to end up doing a whole lot of jobs that other people, we were all dividing up because there were more people in the house. She's going to end up with the bulk
doing
of it.
All.
Nobody else. Yeah. But I do think she's going to, on the flip side of that, she's going to end up with more privileges than her older siblings would have gotten at that age, because there's this thing, I think, a friend of mine, Jennifer Allen, she has 5 kids. She called it age creep. And I think it's a really, it is true. It's when you have teenagers and you have little ones, you see that the rites of passage, you know, they have passed a milestone and gotten a privilege. And then the next younger one gets it a little bit earlier. And then the next younger one gets it a little bit earlier. And you begin to see this and you're thinking, how do I make this stop? You know?
And then they're critical.
Yes.
And the older ones are like, wait, what's happening?
Exactly. I know. So, I mean, that is a thing. That is real. So I don't know. I do think Lucy's going to get the best of it and the worst of it in some ways.
Christina, you mentioned the podcast that you really found helpful, and we'll go ahead and put a link to that in the episode notes. But do you have some other resources that you liked or enjoyed? Even I think you mentioned there's some stories or poems that...
Yeah. So my kids, it's funny, I was asking them at morning time the other day. I said, hey, I am going to be talking about this with Miss Karen on the podcast. Do you guys remember some of the things that we've learned over the years or you've memorized? And they started coming out with all the stuff that I had forgotten about. And so they have learned a number, like, just in their memorization over the years, they've had to memorize some poetry. And you know, the first poem that they ever learned, all of them, is the poem Work. Have you ever heard Work While You Work, Play While You Play, This Is the Way to Be Happy Each Day, All That You Do, Do With Your Might, Things Done by Halves Are Never Done Right? So that's one of the very first poems that they have memorized. And then some others that they all kind of started reminding me, I know this one, and I know this one, is Can't. That's the name of one poem. It starts, can't is the worst word ever written or spoken, doing more harm than something in lies. It's just a whole poem about someone saying they can't do it. And then Results in Roses. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Edgar Guest. My kids like his poems. And we first learned about him through, if you've ever heard of the Book of Virtues or the Harp and Laurel Wreath, those are two big books that are full of poetry, but also some short stories and things that are all about different virtues would be the Book of Virtues. But so Edgar Guest is one of the poets who, an American poet, and all of his stuff is really family oriented. But this one, Results in Roses, is talking about the hard work that goes into something little by little before you see the fruit. And The Man in the Arena Speech by Teddy Roosevelt, that there are certain, and If by Rudyard Kipling, there's just a bunch of them that my my kids over the years have learned. And we talked about some of the books that we read that I think have had a great, influence on them as far as the work ethic in them. Like Farmer Boy and the Little Britches series, second book, Man of the Family is our favorite in the Little Britches series. And then the Created for Work and Boyhood and Beyond are two nonfiction books that Bob Schultz wrote. And it's like in a short chapter form, you can actually have your boys read a chapter each day, or you can read it out loud to the kids, because I like it because it's kind of in a narrative form that keeps their attention. But I love Bob Schultz's books. And, you know, we were talking the other day, Noble came out with this. We're reading Jack Zulu, which is the latest S.D. Smith book that he wrote with his son. And Noble immediately said, oh, you know, like that part where Jack and Benny have to do this really hard job just because they're basically their foreman or their captain, their team doesn't like them and gives them some hard work to do. That's not fair. They decide they need to do it with the best attitude and actually do it better than everybody else. So they were helping me remember all the stories that we've read that have had that kind, that have the message of do your work and do it well. And then we, you know, there were certain books that for me have been helpful for my work ethic, because long time ago, I think Karen, you mentioned Understood Betsy, and how as far as a book about it actually teaches you a lesson about parenting, but it's like, you know, the story of a little girl raised in the city who isn't asked to do anything, and she suddenly has to go live with relatives in the country. And she's expected to pitch in and help with everything, and she flourishes. Well, I love that book because I'm drawn towards, I guess, books that are, they're showing me like that this is, especially when you've got a degree in nonsense, basically, you end up with all of these, ideas that in reality, they don't work out so well if you try to implement most of how they tell you to parent in a university parenting class nowadays. Although I'm 45, so that wasn't nowadays. That was 25 years ago. But some of the books I think that have been helpful to me are where I'm looking at someone whose work ethic is something that I want to emulate. And Persuasion is one of my favorites, and Middlemarch. I love it when you get that comparison between the woman who's willing to dig in and work hard and the one who won't, that resonates with me. But Bleak House is another one. And My Antonia, and then I just lost the last one. It'll come back to me in a minute, maybe. But I was thinking of the other one, The Wise Woman by George MacDonald. I love that book. I know it's like a fairy tale, but I mean, I learned so much from it about my work ethic and my attitudes towards work when I don't feel like it. And so I found that one wonderfully convicting, in the best way possible. I think those were, there are probably dozens that I'm not remembering right now, but I those older books, for some reason, tend to be the ones that I guess have those that are the most encouraging to me, at least, for teaching me how to have the best attitude about work and not that and fight that sense of entitlement, which I feel like even just living in our culture, we're constantly have to push back against, because you know it kind of creeps in.
Well, Christina, thank you. That I think you've left us with some really good thoughts. And that is, we can't ask anything of our children that we're not willing to do ourselves. And it's obviously that you're a woman and a mother who understands the value of, the hard work ethic in yourself. And you obviously model that for your children. And it's obvious that they've come along after you and taken that to heart. So, and I know your husband gets the credit for that too. So thank you. Thank you for spending this afternoon with us and leaving us with so many good ideas and resources. And just I pray the Lord continues to bless you and your children and as you work for him in all kinds of capacities. So thank you for being here with us, and here's to home.
Thank you.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.